Talking with TD. Touchdown, Tennessee! The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I am your host, Teron Davenport. It's another week, another opportunity to talk shop. So you know we're excited about that. Even though this Titans team is 0-4, it's all good, man. No bad days. That's the motto. It's something that this Titans team, it seems like they're living by, you know, being in the locker room and talking to the coaches. Everybody's upbeat. We'll get into that a little bit. So we got Josh Weinfuss, ESPN NFL Nation Cardinals reporter, coming aboard to talk shop. We got Chris Sanders who run TMC. We got me, and we also have Connor Newt.
Yes.
And Connor, let's just start right from the top. You heard Cam Ward's comments. He said if we keep it a buck, you know what we are. It rhymes with grass.
It's a word used for a donkey.
You share that frustration?
Yeah, I do. Just because you look at this roster top to bottom, and on paper, I went down a rabbit hole last night and compared this roster to the 2014 Ken Wisenhunt days. Mm-hmm. On paper, this year's roster is much better talent-wise than that roster.
Really?
10 years ago, in my opinion.
Okay.
I think my frustration lies with the roster talent is not performing to the level that they are capable of. And I think part of that is because of coaching. But I think part of that is just they look so sleepy and so tired. Yeah. And they haven't woken up yet. And I'm not sure they're ever going to wake up this season. I mean, the quote that stuck with me the entire season was a couple weeks ago. And it was Michael Pittman talking about, you know, we saw them in their pregame warmups and they look like they're not ready to play. So that's when we knew. And look, I get that's a rival talking and guys are going to say that when they win
after
games.
After they won, yeah.
When they win games, they're going to say stuff like that. But I did kind of a deep analysis on that quote and applied it to, okay, let's see how they look against the Texans, knowing the information we know now. And it was the same way, except for the defense. I thought the defense played marvelous. And then
three quarters.
Yeah. And then they fell apart.
Yeah. It's interesting watching this team because they show you signs. I know even like with the Broncos game, I'm like, oh, they're going to mess around and win this game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But then the fourth quarter comes and it's just a mess. You look at three quarters, it's 6-0. You know what I mean? It should be 6-6, whatever, but it's 6-0. And you get to the fourth quarter and it's just always like, it's one thing. And all of a sudden you're like, oh shoot, the dam.
Here we go.
The dam is about to break. That's 2nd and 33. Legarius Sneed. And I thought it was really, really interesting what Denard Wilson said, because it ties into something that Jeffrey Simmons said on Wednesday, where he's like, you know, it'll be one or two things on a play. And that play that goes wrong, we have to buck up and bounce back from it, and we haven't done it. That's what he said.
Yeah.
One or two things on the play, right? They're in cover four. Outside leverage is what Legarius Sneed is supposed to have. He decides to do his own thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Mazel tov.
You're a veteran. You have the freedom to do that.
But if you do your own thing,
yeah,
don't give up a 37-yarder on 2nd and 33. And also on that play, the safety came off the hash. And so now, like, you have a recipe for a disaster, right? And you got two guys that are supposed to be deep in that area. In that area is loosely saying it, because obviously cover four, the field's cut up in force, whatever. Nobody is deep as of the deep.
Yeah.
And Nico Collins makes the play. And next thing you know, they go on to score.
Yeah. And look, I think you could look at the off the field comments made earlier in the week by Legarius and say Nico probably heard that.
He heard
these guys hear this stuff.
Yeah, he told them line it up. Like the reporters, I was talking to Aaron Wilson, you know. And he was like, yeah, we brought it to him. You know what I mean? And he said, line that S.
He knows who I am now.
Yeah, line it up. Line it up. And they did.
I mean, you can't help but feel bad for some of the defensive players on some level. Like Jeffrey Simmons, I feel like, has been the best player on the field three games in a row.
Yeah.
He has made, especially in that Houston game, He had that one sack where it looked like he was about to just steal the snap out of the hands of the quarterback. That
quick arm over.
Ridiculous. And I kind of expected a little bit of a jump in play from Jeffrey Simmons after we learned he got in shape and he's kind of changed his mentality a little bit. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect this much of a boost. Like, he looks like a completely different player almost.
Yeah, and he does physically. You know, he told me that he lost 20 pounds, right?
Yeah.
But he said he gained 10 pounds of muscle from mini camp to training camp.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just refining his diet. He said that he increased his turmeric intake because he had blood work done.
Yeah.
And it showed him that he had a lot of inflammation in his body. And so turmeric, and specifically turmeric rice, he's a big part of his diet. And so that helped, you know, go against that. And then on top of that, the weightlifting training and stuff. His brother's a trainer. I wrote a story about him. There's a story about Simmons' diet, too. I'll repost that, as a matter of fact. But nevertheless, to your point, he has been the best player on the field. But you look at this team, right? They're 0-4. It's funny. Like, they're 0-4. They've lost 10 straight games. And, you know, you got a story coming out. Dan Graziano and Jeremy Fowler, they say, hey, the Titans coaching staff feels like they're on notice. And guess what else is going to happen? The sun's going to go down tonight and it's going to come up tomorrow.
Like, I mean, you're 0-4.
You're 0-4. You lost 10 straight. Yes, you should feel like you're on notice. But I tell you what is really interesting, and I wanted to set this up because the more I talk to John Fossil, the more impressed I get. And I've always been one to say that when you're looking for candidates for head coaching jobs, and I'm not saying for the Titans, I'm just talking about period. I think a special teams coach is always a great option because they're dealing with everybody on the roster.
Yeah.
Right? He deals with all the offensive guys, defensive guys. You know what I mean? It's not just, hey, I'm Nick Holtz and I got to worry about the offense. It's I'm John Fossil. I got to worry about the roster, because we're pulling from all of them to make up my unit.
Yeah, and he's got connections with every single guy on that roster. Every single one.
He's able to relate, and you watch him on the field, how upbeat he is, how he's just an energy that you want to be around. And just to give you guys an example of the energy that he brings and just the positive vibes, this was John Fossil when I asked him about finding hope. Reasons for hope. And then it's two comments from him. And the second one is when I asked him about, like, tangible. Like, give me things that we could actually see that shows that you guys have improved. So listen to John Fossil for a second.
It's a great question. And I would say maybe unfortunately or fortunately, I've been through a lot of this before. I've been through a lot of that before when I was coaching in college. My first experience as a coach. I don't need to go into the long stories of it, but from early on in my career, you know, I've been on either small college teams where we weren't very good and we fought back. And then even some professional teams. I've been on really good teams and been on teams that haven't been good. And I think part of my job and where I draw a lot of motivation for myself is to try to uplift, especially the players, when moments or, you know, weeks go on that aren't maybe successful in the win or loss column. I find a lot of competitiveness for myself in that, and I feel like that's when my job maybe matters the most, is to step up when things aren't maybe feeling so good. It's easy as a coach when things are going good, you really kind of just get out of the way. As I've learned, when things are going really good, just keep it rolling, don't mess it up, stay out the way. But when maybe it's not, that's when I think as a coach, you feel like you gotta step up and change the tune of the meeting room, change the tune of the practice field, and see if you can inspire some more confidence and hope in the players that, you know, it's a long season, and our performance matters regardless of the winning or losing. And so that's the focus for us, and that was my message to the special teams guys on Monday.
So that was that part. But then he also talked about tangible things in addition to what it takes, playing more complementary football. This one right here, this is the one. Listen to this.
I mean, I'm not saying I can't say it all that other people aren't. It's a good question, a tough question. I think I've tried to wrap
our arms around the young guys, the rookies. You know, we've talked about it before. We got a lot of new rookies that are, I think, have been fantastic contributors. I can't speak on anything that happened here last year because I wasn't here, offense, defense, or special teams. So I've looked at this group and this opportunity as a fresh one, a new one. And I've tried to keep the schematic very simple, the competition and technique very high. And I think as the season goes, I think we're going to get better and better on special teams. Whatever we've been the first 4 weeks, you know, people can think what they want, but I feel like we're going to get a lot better. You know, the Houston game, from a coach's, if I can kind of go into it a little bit, from a coach's copy, Houston's got a very good special teams unit, very good special teams coach. So for us just to basically kind of go toe-to-toe, it was like a one-on-one game for us on special teams, almost for performance and for production, but almost for evaluation. I hate to say it, even during the course of a game, like, let's put our young guys out there and go compete against this really good special teams unit one-on-one and see what we got. And so sometimes that's been the goal a little bit too, is get our guys out there and fight one-on-ones and teach them what it looks like and teach them how to do it together. And I think maybe as a team for the Titans, you know, one thing we can continue to work on and preach is a complementary football. You know, how does a defensive three and out or a takeaway get turned into points by the offense? And how does a great, you know, kickoff cover, punt cover, you know, turn a drive start from the minus 10 into a three and out for the defense? And so I think one thing we got to work on as Titans as a team is just the complementary football part of it, and not like how does the special teams perform, offense perform, or defense perform as separate entities, but how do we all perform as like one unit, and how does one side of the ball feed off the other? And I think that's a huge part of pro football is not just the separate entities, but how does each team feed off the other? And if one team's, you know, maybe slacking a little bit, one side picks it up. Or if one team capitalizes, then the other face comes in and turns that capital into opportunity. So I know I'm going way too much in a tangent, but football is fascinating in the mold of complementary football. And I think when we get to that part where we can turn a turnover into a touchdown, you know, and a big punt return into a touchdown, and a long drive into a field goal, which gives our defense rest, all those moving parts is going to help us win football games. Sorry for the long answer, but I love talking about that aspect of the game.
I love the answer. And it's just really amazing how you watch this game and you feel shifts, right? And this is why I will always fight tooth and nail with an analytics guy that says, hey, momentum isn't real. He just documented.
Yeah.
He just described how momentum is, right? You pin a team back on a long punt. The defense comes out, feeds off of that, holds them to a three and out. They punt. You get a return that leads to a touchdown. That is complementary football in all three phases.
Yeah, and I think my main takeaway from listening to him talk is it goes beyond the X's and O's of football. He's a motivator.
Yes.
He's got his guys' backs. Let's compare this to the college football game for a second. Look at the top head coaches across the nation. Dan Lanning, Kirby Smart, even our guy Clark Lee over down on West End. What do all of those guys have in common? They are all marquee motivators. Those are guys that you, when they give that pregame speech in the locker room, every single guy in that locker room is dialed in to every single word that they are throwing out there because they play for that guy. You could go beyond the game of football. Look at the NBA. J.J. Redick is a marquee motivator because those guys play for every single word that he says. That's the kind of vibe I get from Bones Fossil. Look, I know he's not a head coach, and kind of what you're insinuating here, TD, is that he would make a good head coach because of this. It goes beyond the X's and O's, and I think he's a remarkable football mind within the world of X's and O's. But that's the main thing that stands out to me is how much he cares about the mentality of his team. And look, he's kind of breaking the fourth wall here a little bit and saying, we know we're bad. We know we're not a good team. But once we get going and once we kind of figure out some of the things that we need to figure out, momentum will start to shift our way.
Yeah.
And that's the key, I think.
And to your point, right, Peter Skoronski, talking to him on Wednesday, I asked him, like, what a win would. Because this team, they've lost 10 straight.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, man, just to get that feeling again, to get that taste in our mouth, it'll give us momentum and motivation going forward. And it's exactly what you just said. Being able to have that aura, euphoria.
As the kids say.
Yeah, like to have that vibe in the locker room, the music playing and everybody bouncing after a game. Instead of it being like 5 o'clock at a building where everybody is running out trying to get home. You know what I mean? Because that's in essence what the locker room is like after games, man. These guys are trying to get up out of there, whether it's at a home game or whether it's at an away game. You finally get in that locker room. Yeah. For the most part, guys are gone.
Yeah.
But when it's a win, naturally, you know, the pace slows down and you just want to sit there and soak in the moment. So Skoronski is 100% right. And as far as the motivation is concerned, yeah, of course, at this level, you shouldn't need to be motivated.
Yeah.
Consistently. But you got to remember, these, they're human beings, right? We all have down times. Shoot, Wednesday before practice, like, I didn't feel like being there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
it's Wednesday.
I channeled things to motivate me. You know what I mean?
Right.
And just the same. I know that there are days where guys don't feel they're going through the motions, but they could use someone to, hey, come on, man, get it going. You know what I mean? In the form that Fossil is doing it. So I think he is a valuable part of this coaching staff. I don't think it's time to fire them yet.
I agree with you.
I don't think it's time yet, but that's not excusing the egregiously bad football these guys have been playing.
Yeah.
To make up a word. But at the same time, give this thing a little more time. I just don't see what firing the coaching staff would do now. Now, however, come 2-3 weeks, if it's still no sign, then yeah, it's time to make a move. But we will see how this thing continues to go. I don't believe that they win.
Yeah.
I don't think that they win, but I'm not going to rule it out.
I don't think Arizona is as good as they make themselves out to be.
Yeah.
That's just me. And look, to your point, TD, about firing the coaches, I don't think now is the time, because all you would get is maybe a slight bump. And I don't think it's worth firing your coach 4 weeks into the season for that slight bump. Now, like you said, if we get to week 10 and this team has won 1 to 2 games and they're looking the same level of skill and the same level of motivation, then yeah, pull the plug. But right now, I'm with you. I don't think it's time.
I'm going to say this. If they're 0-7, you got to get rid of them.
Yep.
Right? Because that 0-7 will mean losses this week and next week.
Yeah.
And a loss October 19th.
To that one guy.
Mike Vrabel and the New England Patriots. I don't think Amy Adams Strunk will be able to stomach that, because you know if the Patriots win, they're gonna win. You know what I mean?
Vrabel will hit the interwebs and tweet some cryptic stuff directed at Amy, and it'll be a whole thing.
Yeah.
And we'll find out Tuesday morning that Brian Callahan has been relieved.
Either way, we're going to continue to do this show, so we're going to go to a break. We'll be right back with Run TMC. Make sure you all stay tuned.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD. And coming to you live as the music fades and the lights dim, we're going to go to Phoenix. Because that's where the Titans are going. And now, starting at power forward for your Phoenix Suns, out of Houston University, number 45, Bo Alcorn.
Oh, hold on, man. I'm kidding. And now, starting for the Houston Rockets, Ralph Sampson. Man, why are you going to call me Bo?
Yeah, that's right.
That's cold, man. That's cold, man.
Hilarious. That's hilarious.
Hey, so, before we start the show, man, I know you got to go. Before we start the show, man, it's funny because I talked to somebody about our show, and they was in the gym, whatever, whatever. And they said they love it when we talk about each other, man. So good stuff, brother.
Yeah, you got to be able to joke.
Got to.
It lightens the moment. So
yeah, absolutely.
The moments need to be lightened when a team is 0-4
and
you have a coaching staff that's they're on notice. They know what it is. They are at the bottom in so many categories. You got Cam Ward off to a historically bad start.
Yeah.
I mean, you name it, it's gone wrong. What do you think of this coaching staff? And if you were in there, like, what would you say is a reason for this organization to have hope, to keep hope alive?
I mean, you know, it's tough because, you know, TD, I've been in this situation before. When I got drafted, I mean, I think we only won 6 games, but you're going to really find out in this situation who your leaders are. And we, you know, we had, it was, Jeff, I think it was Jeff Fisher's second year because, you know, he was a young coach at that time. So, you know, I thought he was a good leader. And then we had great leadership on the defensive side. We had Joe Bowden. We had, you know, Blaine Bishop. We had Marcus Robinson, guys that didn't quit. So if we could still build that way, and even though we were losing, then later on down the road, we had some pieces and we could win. So if I had a chance to talk to this coaching staff, this is just my opinion. I know it sounds like coach talk, but you have to keep building. You have to keep trusting, and you have to keep seeing the impossible, because if you don't see it as a coach, the impossible, how are your players going to see the impossible? So it doesn't just rely on the players. It relies on the coaches and the players.
At what point do you feel like results need to start showing?
I mean, like now. I mean, they have to show now because – you know, we had a lot of talk about, okay, the offensive line has improved. Okay, we talked about the wide receiver position. We talked about, you know, the secondary. We talked about all these things that we want to see get better. And I think it's the same, or, and I say this respectfully, I think it's even worse. So the time is not later. The time is now, because at the end of the day, you know, we talk about the NFL. It's not for long. It's what have you done for me lately? So guys got to start making plays. And here's another thing, TDs. Your stars have to make the plays. Jeffrey Simmons showed a start a little bit last week. Simmons balled out, I mean, on some plays where they were ferocious. But then you got Calvin Ridley that makes a play here and there. He's supposed to be your guy that you can depend on, and the guys that you're depend on are not dependable right now.
And that's the thing. This team is desperately in need of someone to step up and be like, look, I'm that guy on offense.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they don't have that guy yet. And I mean, a running back, look, the way this league is now, running back can only do so much unless you're Derrick Henry or Saquon Barkley. You know, after that, there's not really – so, yeah, Pollard's a good player, but there's only so much that he could do. So what do you think is the answer?
I mean, it just goes back to where your leaders have to make plays. And I'm going to tell you, you know, one play that really hurt my feelings. It's second and 33. I'm the lockdown corner. You brought me in, you know, paid me a lot of money. But then all of a sudden, you have a receiver just run right by you. And I'm not questioning anybody's effort because I'm not going to do that. But in my opinion, as a football play, I'm talking about a football play, not the person, but it just didn't feel like the effort was there. It was no sense of urgency. If it's second and 33, I'm locking somebody up and I'm protecting my zone. I'm not letting nobody run free. So those are the things that we're talking about, to where your stars have to play like stars and make plays. And on that situation, your star didn't make a play.
Well, you heard Denard Wilson's explanation for that, right?
No, I didn't. What did he say?
They had kind of a cover four look going.
Okay.
And the safety came off the hatch. There was supposed to be some help over top. But
yeah,
then also, on top of that, Snead was supposed to play with outside leverage. He didn't. And, you know, so you got two breakdowns on the coverage, and you get a big play like that. And to me, I think that was the turning point of the game. Because at that point, it was 6-0, you know, and that was the turning point to me.
Yeah, and then you say cover four, but here's the thing, as being football savvy, okay, if I'm playing my quarters and the safety's playing his quarters, and I don't have no threat with the number two receiver and I'm the safety, then I'm just going to stay with that post. But then if I don't have a threat, like at the cornerback – and which Snead did have a threat. When I say the threat, Nico Collins was there. I'm taking him. I mean, you see what I'm saying? You know what I mean about this?
Just change the covers, convert to man, and get him.
Right, Right.
And that's because, understandable because a lot of teams, that's how it works. You know, if a guy comes into your – it's zone man, you know?
Yeah. I'm just not going to let it – I'm trying to make it as simple as possible, so maybe I'm stumbling a little bit. But you just gotta be a ball player right there. It's second and 33. I'm not going to get beat behind me regardless, you know, if I'm playing my zone. That's just what it is. You got to be a savvy vet, and I just think that he didn't make the play on that situation.
Yeah, and especially if you go back and look at the play. Nappy that, you know. But either way, it was one that really got away from him. Yeah. I don't know. Have you noticed, though, because it just seems like fourth quarter. Like, this team is competitive in the first three quarters.
They are.
But the fourth quarter, it just goes to crap.
It does. I mean, and then this is what I have to struggle with because I kind of look at the film is, you know, we got to have those hustle plays. You know, when we're in the backside and they're running the opposite, I want to see 8-9 hats to the ball. I just think that a lot of guys are just standing around and making it like to where somebody else has got to make a play. You know, if I'm on the other side and I'm chasing somebody down, why? Because I want to win. I want to do that. So it's just wild.
So what do you think of just this overall direction, right? You got the play calling being ceded to Bo Hardegree. You got Brian Callahan taking a step back and being more of an orchestrator. Where do they go from here?
I don't know. I think that the one thing we struggle with right now is what's the identity of the team? I mean, what's the identity in the offense? I mean, if you go to 1999, we knew our identity. Our identity was we're going to run the ball first, and then we're going to move the chains, and we're going to get a pass once in a while on the outside. What's the identity? Our identity on defense in 1999 is we're going to make you work to get touchdowns. We're going to be physical. We're going to have 8-9 hats to the football. And then we can go to special team. You got Al DelGreco. We know that if we get down in the red zone, we're going to score. So now you got the Tennessee Titans of 2005 and 2026. What's the identity? We don't know if they're a running team. We don't know if they're a passing team. We got a defense that's you know, struggling to stop the run at times, giving up explosive plays. So, you know, you can't have no direction if you don't have no identity with your team. So they got to figure it out quick and try to get this ball rolling.
Yeah, and that's the thing, the direction, the identity. I wouldn't even begin to know what this team's identity is. What do you think about the things that are happening on the edges with the pass rush, being able to pass protection?
You're talking about our offense, our offensive line?
Against the pass rush, what do you think of the pass protection?
I mean, it's okay at times, but then, you know, I mean, you got seven. You're giving up 17 sacks in four games. I mean, that's still not good. So if I'm an offensive coordinator, I got to figure out a way to help my tackles out that are struggling. You know, so what I would do, we talk about this all the time. I put going to a 12 set. That's one back, two tights to protect my tackles to where I can protect my quarterback. So, you know, they got to figure this out quick because at the end of the day, man, if you don't protect your quarterback, he's not going to last. I mean, I know it's kind of cool when he's scrambling and, you know, throwing the ball downfield and this and that, but sometimes that backfires on you because if you don't get rid of the ball, as opposed to it being second and 10, now it's second and 20, and the Tennessee Titans are not built like that.
Yeah, they're definitely not built like that because this team has been this way since 2019, it seems like, where everything has to go perfect for it to work. And, you know, up until a couple of years ago, they had Derrick Henry to fall back on, and they had just have him get things back on schedule. But what do they do now?
I mean, it's struggling in all facets of the game. I mean, look at the special teams. I know, you know, DK makes some good returns, but then now you got your kicker missing two easy chip shots. So, you know what I'm saying? So who can you rely and put your hat on? You can't really do it. You just made a phenomenal point about, okay, if the game goes wrong or something goes bad, you had Derrick Henry to rely on. If you have a situation with this offense and you get down by 10, who can you rely on? You can rely on Pollard a little bit, but he's not one of those guys that scares you as a defensive coordinator. Calvin Ridley, he'll catch one for 27, but then you don't know what he's going to do consistently. So they're going to have to figure it out quick, offense, defense, and special teams.
What do you make of this defense, the 20 points in the fourth quarter? I think they're outscored like 37-6 or something crazy like that, fourth quarters this year.
Yeah, I think that they're a tired defense. Look at the time of possession they had last week. Houston Texans had 38-21. You had the Titans had 21-39. I mean, you got a tired defense. Your defense is consistently out there because your offense is not scoring any points. So you can blame them a little bit. Yeah, they need to make plays. Yeah, they need to get some stops. But when you're out there for 38 minutes each game, you're going to have a tired defense because that's what you see in the fourth quarter. It's kind of like they're dwindling down.
Yeah, and that's exactly the case because when you look in the fourth quarter, you know, typically – missed tackles, that's a fatigue, a lack of technique.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lack of technique is tied right back into fatigue because when you get tired, your technique fails if you're not concentrating. But, I mean, look at these missed tackles, man. There's been an explosive run in each game that resulted in a touchdown with missed tackles.
Yeah, that's a fatigued defense. A defense is tired because we always talk about having fundamentals because we talk about this all the time. The first two quarters, man, they are balling out. I mean, they're physical. Jeffrey Simmons is blowing people up, and, you know, he has some energy. But you can't have energy when you're in a fourth quarter and, you know, their offense has 38 minutes and the Tennessee Titans offense is 21-39. I mean, you're going to have a tired defense. And if you look at the Tennessee Titans when they were on offense, there was a couple, maybe two or three three and outs. When you're having three and outs, then all of a sudden you got to go right back on the field as opposed to the Texans having a long drive. It just makes a tired defense.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what to make of this, man. They have to get it back together. How long do you think before this coaching staff ends up not being a coach in Tennessee anymore?
I don't know, man, but I think that if they go to Phoenix and lose this real bad, and then this is really going to be the kicker, if they lose to the Patriots, I think that's going to be the tipping point to where, okay, enough is enough. And if they go into this game and they lose this one, and then lose those other ones, I think that, you know, the fans are going to get upset, and then Amy Schrunk's going to get upset, and then they're going to pick the panic button. So it's going to be interesting, man. So hopefully they can turn it around, but they'll be all right.
Well, what's your outlook on the game this week? You got Kyler Murray.
Yeah. I don't know, because every time I say the Titans, there's something crazy happens. But I'm just going to bet on the Titans again this week because, you know, their backs are against the wall. You know, they're 0-4. I mean, they lost two division games. So, you know, this would be a great start to get a bad taste out of your mouth because you've been losing games. You've been losing. You got shut out last week, and everybody's talking about how bad you are, talking about the coaching staff. So when you're back against the wall, you're going to see who your fighters are. So I think you're going to have the Tennessee Titans winning by 3 points. I think they're going to go down there and beat them.
If somehow what you said comes true, what does a win, like finally getting that donut out of the win column, what does that do for a locker room?
It means a lot. I mean, it's kind of like watching that movie Waiting to Exhale. I mean, it's like you can take a breath. You went through just like a situation where they had bad relationship. Then all of a sudden you find a great relationship. Then you can exhale like, okay, I finally made it. That's a situation with the Tennessee Titans. You had a bad game after this, a bad game after that, a bad series. All these things are bad. You can just exhale, okay, and say, you know what? Even though I had some bad performances, 1-4 is not good, but it still gives us a chance to exhale and go try to win some more ball games.
Waiting to exhale or how Cali got his groove back.
Yes, sir.
I was watching a movie, and
oh my God.
It was a really funny one, and we're like, who is this actor that has a part? Like, it's been a long time since I've seen somebody with a part in their head. You know how back in the day they used to get the parts cut in their head. So I'm like, I know who it is, but do you know who it is? So I turned to the person I was watching it with. They said, yeah, that's Chris Sanders. I said, no, that's Robert Townsend.
Oh, man, get off this, man.
This is Cedric Gray, and I'm talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. You hear that OC, time's up. I tell you what, time could be up on the Titans if they don't get a win this weekend. But the team standing in the way is the Arizona Cardinals. So naturally, what we're going to do is go ahead and dig into the black book. I had to go to the W section to get my guy, my boy, Josh Weinfuss, ESPN NFL Nation Cardinals reporter. Josh, what's good, man?
Man, everything is great. You know, this is like people are listening to the Daryl Strawberry fan club in real life. This is unbelievable.
Hey, you know, before we get into this game, So guess what, man? They had a card show here in Nashville. It was in Franklin, which is like, you know, basically close. It's like Glendale to Phoenix, whatever. But Daryl Strawberry, Doc Gooden, Howard Johnson, I mean, like, they had everybody there. And it had to be on a Saturday where I was traveling. You know I was sick.
See, here's the thing. That's when you change your flight. You take the red eye. You camp out all night. You are first in line and get on that flight after that.
You're right. I mean, the opportunity to meet Doc would have been worth it. I've met Straw multiple times, and he even came here for a Fellowship of Christian Athletes thing, and I got to take a picture with him and talk to him. And actually, before my mom passed, he prayed for my mom, man. Like, we held hands and he prayed. Like, that's
amazing.
You talk about a moment. That was a moment, man.
Yeah.
For sure. So
the only time I've seen him, so obviously I watched him in person as a kid, like, playing.
Yeah.
But it was 1999. I was at a youth basketball tournament in Columbus, Ohio. It was like 6 o'clock in the morning. We're sitting outside the gate of the terminal, just dead to the world. We're like 16, 17 years old. And I see these boots walk by me, right? And I'm like, there's like alligator skin. And I look up and it's Daryl Strawberry. I guess I'd have to go back and like try to like match all up, but like he was playing for the Columbus Clippers. It was in Columbus, Ohio. And I think he had just gotten called up by the Yankees. And I was like, this is one of the greatest moments of my young life.
You know what I mean? It's crazy, man. But yeah, I'm with you. I forgot that you were a fellow Mets fan and a big one at that, man. We need to next year, before the season starts, let's make arrangements, meet at LaGuardia, and we'll go to a game. I have a package of tickets, a 20-game package, so we'll make sure.
You really?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I went to about 11 games this year, sold the other one. So, but yeah, nevertheless, I know fans are like, man, we tuned in to talk about the Cardinals and Titans, not the Daryl Strawberry. But hey, listen, man, our love affair just has to be brought to light. So let's start with this then, because obviously this Titans team, they're desperate for a win at 0-4. The Cardinals, you know, they sit at 2-2 in that dangerous NFC West. I guess overall, what's the vibe? What's the temperature of the team right now? You know, at 2-2, it seems like they're always like right around 500 or just above it.
Yeah, so it's interesting because they lost two games in 5 days on walk-off field goals. And according to Elias, it's the first time that's ever happened since the merger in 1970, right? So, like, brutal ways to end these games. And the offense looked awful in the first half of each game. Second half was The fourth quarter of Thursday night's loss to the Seahawks, the offense looked great. But that's one out of eight quarters in the last two games. So on one hand, you have this team that's struggling offensively. They can't get anything going. The run game is a mess. The passing game isn't working. Just nothing is really going offensively except for that last quarter against Seattle, right? So then you have Jonathan Gannon telling us that these two losses are lighting some sort of match under this team. Is that true? I don't know, right? Like, it's very hard to believe that these two losses and the way that they lost those games is going to be any sort of motivational factor, but he's insisting it is. So from a vibe standpoint, you have the coach saying one thing, you have action saying another. We have no idea what this vibe is until Sunday afternoon, right? Like, we have no idea how they're going to come out. Either that fourth quarter is going to carry over into Sunday and they're just going to light it up, or they're going to kind of, you know, be stuck in the mud again for another week. And they had another big blow this week. Trey Benson, who was the starting running back in place of James Conner, who was lost for the season, he got injured against Seattle. He has a knee injury. So he had a procedure done on his knee. So he's out 4 to 6 weeks now. So Arizona's down to their third, fourth, and fifth string running backs as their main guys. So the running game might not get any better.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Amari DeMarcado, Michael Carter. I remember Michael Carter and Bam Knight. Tough sledding right there, running back, huh?
Mm-hmm. Tough sledding, right? So the question is, like, who's going to get the tilt, right? So is it going to be Michael Carter, he's shifty, he's quick, he has experience, or is it going to be Amari DeMarcado, who's just kind of this even-keeled, a power back, can get you some dirty yards, quick in space, I can be a pass catcher. And Bam Knight, we haven't really seen a ton of so far. So, I think it's going to be a combination of everybody. It's going to be a little bit, you know, we might see Carter on first and second. We might see DeMarcado on second and third. DeMarcado could be your first. Like, it's going to be a little bit of everything. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see Kyler Murray just run the daylights out of the ball, kind of taking the running game into his own hands.
That's what I was going to ask you about. We're talking to ESPN NFL Nation Cardinals reporter Josh Weinfuss. I'm curious. You mentioned the running aspect with Kyler Murray. Where's that balance? Like, where are they with finding that balance, making sure, of course, that they don't run him too much to risk injury and those types of things?
So it is a balance, right? It's a fine line. It's something that he wants to do. He knows he can make plays with his feet. And obviously there's design runs and there's off-schedule runs. Mm-hmm. And he's had to make a number of off-schedule runs where this plays just don't develop. You know, the pocket breaks down or the coverage is good. It's too good and he has to get out of there. But they also don't mind calling a run here and there. So in terms of him getting injured, like, it's just part of it, right? Like, if he gets injured on a run, they will live with that because it's part of this offense. It's part of who he is, part of the fabric of him as a quarterback, right? Like, could he sit back in the pocket and throw 40 times a game? Absolutely. Could he split it up 20 and 20? Absolutely. Could he run 10 and throw 30? Yeah, he could do all of it, right? But I think this team understands that in order for the offense to get going, he needs to make plays. And not only just to gain yards and maybe even score a touchdown here and there, but what he does is so demoralizing for defenses because it's like a video game out there, right? And I don't know if people are going to take it the wrong way, but, like, you just hit the C button and you just watch him put on the afterburners, right? And guys are chasing him. Guys look like they're flailing. Like, he embarrasses guys out there. And that's really tough when guy thinks he has them wrapped up and Kyler just steps out of it and keeps going, or the guy just can't get his ankles, right? So it's just a combination of all of that. But his running is deeply important to this offense.
Yeah, and it's funny you mention that because, you know, in my whiteboard Wednesday, I looked at a way they could try to contain him in the pocket. And one of the things I said is Kyler Murray always runs. Like, when he runs, he reminds me of like a little kid that stole something from the store and is running away from, like, just the way it just, like, he looks so much smaller than everybody else, but he's just going, and it cracks me up. So I'm glad you mentioned his running part of it. Have you seen just a lot of them incorporating the RPO process and doing some things to get Marvin Harrison Jr. involved?
Yes, they are. They moved him in the slot this year, and they're trying to get him some easy passes early, trying to get him going, and then they kind of spread him out a little bit, trying to let him go downfield to do his thing. He's coming off probably one of the worst games. It's not the worst game he's had as a pro. He was involved in two interceptions. One, he just stopped the route because Kyler broke out of the pocket, and Marvin did not know if he should be blocking or if he should continue the route, and Kyler broke out of the pocket and threw it. So it's one of those tricky things when you play with a mobile quarterback. Like, when they start to move, what do you do as a receiver, right? Because you need to block for them, but you also need to be aware of them, you know, throwing the ball. So it was a tricky situation. And then the other one was he bobbled the ball and it got picked off. So he's coming off of probably one of the worst games he had played, but also that fourth quarter he had a touchdown. Yeah, maybe two touchdowns, I don't remember off the top of my head, but he had some great plays, right? He did a great touchdown catch, and he just kind of, you can tell the monkey was off his back, right? He just felt like he was relieved. He got down on one knee and just kind of, you can tell the emotion was flooding out of him. So it was a weird dichotomy, right? Like, one of the worst games, and also he played great at the end. So they need to get him involved more. They understand that this offense runs through him, or the passing game runs through him. So it's just a matter of how quickly can they get him going this week.
And we're talking to ESPN for Nation Cardinals reporter Josh Weinfuss. Josh, the offensive line, and I do want to get to Trey McBride, but the offensive line, we look at Jeffrey Simmons and what he's doing for the Titans defense. Brian Callahan said that he would be hard-pressed to find a better defensive player right now. What type of opportunity do you think there is for Simmons against this offensive line?
I think they're going to give him a lot of attention. Kyler Murray said today that he would rather have an elite defender come off the edge than up the middle because it doesn't give him as much time to react once the guy comes up the middle. So that's going to be something they're going to, you know, pay attention to. I think he's going to he might have a field day. I'll just be honest, right? Like, the interior line has had some issues this year. You know, I think that he could feast if the Cardinals don't block it properly. And the problem is, if they do block it properly, that could open up some things for the other guys. So it's going to cause them problems. Like, but then again, this team's played against, they played against Aaron Donald for years, so they kind of are aware of having a force in the middle. I do think Simmons is going to cause a lot of issues, and I think they're just going to run Kyler, have him kind of execute this offense in a way that just kind of keeps him out of that center of the pocket. This way he's not being chased by Simmons playing and play out.
No doubt about it. And obviously Trey McBride, he's a force. Do you feel it's safe to mention him like among the top five tight ends in the league?
No, I think it's safe to mention him among like the top two or three tight ends.
Ooh.
Right? Like,
ooh.
Yeah, I think he's up there, right? I think he got paid like one this offseason. Mm-hmm. He might be as talented, if not more talented, than any receiver in the NFL. You know, one Cardinals coach compared him to, or said he's the second best tight end in the league behind Brock Bowers, right? And that's only because they consider George Little to be a little bit older. And, but he has he can do everything, right? He can catch, he can block, he can catch in space, he can go deep, he can make guys miss, right? He's kind of a multiple threat tight end. And he's a game changer, and Kyler loves playing with him because he's kind of Kyler's outlet. He's smart. He kind of finds, you know, the holes in the zone. He can kind of make guys miss. And man, and he's a matchup problem. What are you going to do? You're going to put a safety on him, and then he's going to, you know, he'll go deep. If you're going to put a corner on him, he'll go short, right? Like, so he knows how to play this game at a very high level, and it comes across every game. Could he use more targets? 100%. Does he need to get more involved for this team to win? Yes. I think we might see that this week.
Where would you say the strengths are with this defense? Obviously, you know, Calais Campbell, the ageless wonder. Josh Sweat is a guy I'm, you know, from the Eagles I'm very familiar with. Buda Baker, of course. But are there some guys that you feel are playing better than the notification or like the credit they're getting?
Yeah, I think we're seeing that up front quite a bit. You know, I think we're, you know, you just named basically everybody that's playing well. You know, you have Clay Campbell has been, you know, the snaps he gives, he's giving great snaps. Josh Sweat has been playing very well. You have Zaven Collins coming off the edge. I think that their edge rushers have been playing well. They might not be bringing down the quarterback as much as they want to, but they're affecting the quarterback more than they want to, right? Like, they're making guys throw quick. They're making guys kind of, you know, move out of the pocket, which obviously makes things easier for everyone else. So they're playing well. Mack Wilson's been playing well. The corners have been playing relatively well. They've had a ton of injuries at corner. So those guys are playing well. Buda Baker is kind of all over the place. You know, Jalen Thompson, the safety, he's someone we need to talk about because he's an elite safety, but with all the injuries at corner, especially the Garrett Williams, he's had to play in the slot more. So he's doing a ton of stuff out there every game. So there's a lot on his plate and he's been handling it well. But if I had to narrow your question down to like one position, I think, you know, the edge rushers are playing very well and they're kind of affecting this game. And to take it one step further back, even like the defensive front, they've been able to they've had a number of third down stops, number of fourth down stops. They've been giving the ball back to the offense on a regular basis, which is what you want from a defense. It's just the offense can't convert. So I think this defensive front is kind of becoming the area that this team can hang its hat on.
Gotcha. What's the latest on Darius Robinson? He reminds me, by the way, a guy who played there in Arizona for a bit, and Marcus Golden reminds me of him. This is a taller version of it. How has he been, and what's his status right now?
He has a chest injury. We don't know what his status is for the game. He's slowly getting, I guess he's slowly improving, but we don't know yet if he'll be ready for Sunday.
Okay, that could be a break for the Titans, but a break for that Cardinals front is going against those Titans tackles. If you had to give a prediction, do you think this is the game the Cardinals win?
TD, why are you doing this to me? I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, I think the problem is you're going to have a really, really mad Titans team coming in. And this is the type of game that Arizona's lost in the past. I think here's what I'll say. I think we're going to see it go one or two ways. I think we're either going to see Arizona put up 40 and all their offensive issues are going to go away. Or this is the type of game that Arizona's going to struggle with. They're going to go down into the fourth and try to come back just like they have the last 2 weeks. And it's not going to work. I don't think we're going to see anything like, I don't think we're going to see Arizona win by a touchdown. I think it's going to be all or nothing. An all or nothing type of game.
Yeah. Very, very inconsistent. Fourth quarter, you mentioned that. This Titans team, they're basically, 30th, giving up 11.8 points in the fourth quarter. They went into last week's game against the Texans. It was 6-0. Jeez. It ends up being 26-0. So that just to give you an idea how things are. So we will see how everything works out, man. I'm gonna hit you up when I touch down. I'm staying in Phoenix, but I'll shoot you a text when I touch down, man. If you're free, we could get up.
All right, man, let's do it.
All right, for sure. Appreciate you, Josh, and as right. always,
I'll see you this weekend.
Let's go Mets.
All right, let's go Mets.
So that was Josh Weinfuss, as you heard, noted Mets fan, just like yours truly. Tough season, man. Very tough season. I did not expect to miss a whole postseason. I thought I was going to be flying to New York for at least one. But either way, that's not important. What's important is that we make sure we deliver you the best Titans news and analysis that we could possibly give. And I appreciate each of you for rocking with us. Shout out to Josh Weinfuss, Chris Sanders, Connor Newt producing, and each of you. Definitely make sure you continue to rock with us. Check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you get your fine listening material. Search Talking with TD, subscribe, rate, review.